listening to KBOO Portland.
Did you catch the Bluegrass Marathon? If you enjoyed the programming, you can show your support for KBOO and music from the True Vine by purchasing a commemorative 2026 Bluegrass Marathon t-shirt. The t-shirt's graphic was brilliantly designed by KBOO volunteer and Bluegrass host Justin Auld. To check out the merch and catch the recording of the marathon, head over to kboo.fm/bluegrass.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Camp Bluegrass Pride, an LGBTQ+ bluegrass music group featuring hands-on workshops, one-on-one instruction, collaborative jams, and nightly concerts from June 21st through June 26th in Astoria, Oregon. All identities and skill levels welcome. More info at bluegrasspride.net.
Maybe I didn't love you quite as often as I could have.
Good morning, Portland Pollies. This is Dr. Tony Zimbardi, and you're listening to the show Radical Romance, the show of, by, and for those of us in or desiring of ethical non-monogamy. Relationships that might be open or might be poly in nature, this is the program for you. So I have a little bit of things I want to talk about first, and then I have my interview with a individual named Dar who's here today, and we'll get to Dar in 1 minute. But first I want to talk about, you know, I typically open the show with those advice letters from the New York Times ethicist that I frequently read in order to sort of stimulate calls. But lately, you callers have been quite quiet. So I'd love to hear from any of you today who feel like calling in. Pick up your phone and please dial 503-231-8187 and we'll talk. Okay. So, yes, typically I do the ethicist from the New York Times, and the Times has not printed any ethicist columns in all of this year so far, so I'm not quite sure what's happening with the Times and the ethicist. Maybe he's on break of some sort, on vacation, taking a leave of absence. But in my search for tales of polyamory, I came across some interesting articles, all from the Times, on particular, I'll just say this, women's/feminist experiences of dealing with polyamory, which I thought was going to be a pro-polyamory take, but it turned out to be not the case. So one of the first people they wrote about was this profiler from New York City, former ballerina with the New York City Ballet, I believe, named Hannah Nealman. And she had written a memoir that the Times found pretty devastating. And the more I read the article on Hannah and read that how some of the pieces about her were written by other, quote, feminist women also in polyamorous relationships. But none of the women seemed to have a positive take on it. So I will start with that. And that might lead into some discussions with my guest today as well. So, Ms. Nealman considers herself a millennial feminist, and she entitles her book a polyamorous memoir, or polyamory memoir. She left her job in New York, moved to a farm with her husband. By the time she was 34, had 8 children individually. No pain meds, no one in the room with her helping. So that's quite an ordeal already, in my opinion. Let's see. Uh, She feels that most stances on polyamory make the husband the bad guy. And sure enough, most of the anecdotal stories do sort of, from what I read, at least make the husband look like the bad guy, the culprit, so to speak. There was another woman also married in a poly relationship named Lindy West, who writes a lot about this person, Hannah. And Lindy West is also a poly wife, as she describes herself. She wrote a book called Adult Braces, meaning that she found the experience of being in a polyamorous marriage to be quite confining. The polyamorous marriage was the brace. She wrote an article which caused polyamory to be the death of feminism. And her book was labeled a cautionary tale of feminism. All quite interesting. And let's see, let me get to the next part of my notes here. She concluded with, "Do you think I have ever felt like I deserve to demand anything of men?" Meaning how unbalanced and how fair the scales were weighed in these poly relationships. And sure enough, I can see, even from watching the poly TV shows, that they do seem to favor men. I think the whole feminist movement in general kind of favors men, in the sense that women, yes, they get to go to work now. They still have to come home quite frequently, as my own mother did, and still cook dinner, clean the house, and all the things that women had to do before feminism came along. And the men, on the other hand, get to enjoy the benefits of polyamory, which is the outside sex. So not that only men enjoy sex, but women do too. So that's what I took away from these stories. Miss West wrote that she loved sleeping in the guest room, away from her husband, away from the kids, but she confessed that she did like to sneak into the kids' bedroom and snuggle up with them. So that was the comfort she received in her marriage, was the relationships with her children. And as a parent myself, I do confess that there's something like the love of your child, someone that you put all of your nurturing energy and love into, that you ask nothing back from, but yet you get back tenfold what you put into it. There's a great reward to being a parent, and I absolutely love being one myself. I mean, my kids are still around. We just live in different states, but they're grown-ups with their lives of their own now. I'm trying to read my own writing here. And she finally concludes her article with, "Politics can't clean up the room, and the self-annihilating need for love in any circumstances it may be offered." So again, she felt that there was something behind the love when it came from a man that was different for her than the love that came from her children. So I'll wrap up that talk about those ladies for now and talk to my guest. Hi, Dar.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent. So tell me about your own experiences with polyamorous relationships.
Well, I'm pretty new to polyamory. I had a serious partner about 2 years ago that we dated, about 9-8 years. But the last 3 years of the relationship, we were trying out to be poly. And I will say I had a lot of difficulty trying to transition the relationship from monogamy to polyamory. I would say that's a it can work, but it's a really hard thing to do. So now, and then I was, that relationship ended, and it was pretty tumultuous the last few years when we did try polyamory, and it didn't feel very ethical. We both made a lot of mistakes. Now, a year after that, I'm in a new relationship that is queer, and it is poly, and it started out as poly out of the gate, so there wasn't this, like, I already knew what I was getting into. There wasn't this transitionary period.
Let me have you rewind just a little bit. Whose idea was it, the whole polyamory?
Back when I was monogamous, initially it was my idea, and I would like to say that it was because I was not getting my needs met, all of my needs met in that monogamous relationship. And that is not a good reason to change relationship dynamics. There needed, I mean, it is a good reason, but it's not, the way I went about it was not great. And I needed to have better communication and some other things worked out before changing dynamics.
What needs were not being met? I'm curious. Can you tell the audience?
Yeah, there was emotional needs not being met, some physical needs, but it was a lot of also this dynamic of I did feel as like the feminine person. I took care of a lot of the house and needed more help with that. That felt unfair. And I needed like more growth and connection from my partner.
Good answer.
Or former partner.
So, yes. So how did you, now that relationship was ostensibly heterosexual in nature, that was a male partner?
Yes, to the outside world, I would say it was heterosexual appearing. It was still queer in some regards, but that was a cis man I was dating before.
Mm-hmm. And the person you are dating now is?
They're femme. They're trans feminine. So I would say that's a queer relationship. I myself identify as a non-binary person, but still very much feminine leaning. I kind of identify as both masculine and feminine at the same time. But yeah, it's this relationship just feels a lot more fluid and it makes a lot more sense for me.
Good, good. So, how did you meet your current partner?
On the dating apps, as one does a lot these days, actually. It's a lot more the norm for,
I met my ex-husband on a dating app.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people these days, no matter the generation they come from, it's like tech is a big part of our lives, you know, whether we like it or not. And we... it's a lot easier to connect with people you normally would not over the internet. So it was Tinder. Shout out Tinder.
Did this person identify themselves as trans?
Yes.
So you knew to some extent what you'd be dealing with?
Yeah, I was really more excited to connect on an emotional level than anything else. I needed that emotional presence and support from whoever my partner would be.
Mm-hmm.
As a kind of more demisexual person, like the emotional connection is very important to me in something that I would want to pursue as a serious partnership.
Can you describe this person physically? And I don't mean whether like saying things like, oh, they're pretty. I don't mean that. I mean,
she's tall.
Uh-huh.
She's got long, beautiful, thick brown hair. She's got long lashes and...
Did you say long, beautiful, fake brown hair? Did you say fake?
No, long, beautiful hair, like brown hair, yeah. Really pretty hazel eyes and long lashes. And she's just really silly and funny and very honest and real. And I love that about her.
Mm-hmm. How did the first date go? And I'm curious.
It went well. I believe we went to a sushi restaurant that has the conveyor belt, and it's the conveyor belt is on a little train, and this is in downtown Southwest. And I love trains. She loves trains too. And the sushi was on a train, so it was really cute, a really cute talking point. And I think it was a little awkward. I'm a little bit shy and reserved the first few times you meet me. But I, out of the gate, I was struck by how nice she was and she is, and how open she is. And so I was like, oh, I'm not sure where this will go, but definitely want to see her again.
And how long has it been now at this point?
It's been about like 4 or 5 months, so pretty early into it, but feeling good about it.
Good, good. Had you ever dated any trans people in the past?
No, I wouldn't say I have, or not to my knowledge, you know. And I would say, like, I was not as comfortable with my own queer identity years ago, and I'm still unpacking some of that myself.
Do you identify yourself queer now at this point, or?
I do. I do identify myself as queer and non-binary, and I do take up that space and feel like I have a place in the community, but it's not my entire identity, and it's not a leading talking point when I am in rooms or in cis-hetero spaces. It's just part of many things about me.
From the start, did you feel comfortable with this person sexually?
Yes.
Good, good. And the physical may not have always been what you had been used to dealing with, or had it pretty much?
It was fine. It was great. Yeah, it was... everything, I don't know. It's just, it was a lot more... The connection, the emotional connection, was a key moment of it. And it that beautiful, there's like a beautiful fluidity and like connection with queerness that I needed, and that like kind of bounced back more self-love to me that I hadn't received, I think, when being with in more heteronormative relationships. And it's great.
I know I myself have never dated anyone who is trans. Any advice you might give for anybody who's looking or interested in dating a trans person?
I just have communication, be respectful. Trans people are people, you know. It's just a regular person. So, yeah, ask questions.
I'm glad you said that, because I have always said that in relationships, respect trumps love. It's more important that you be treating your partner respectfully. And if you treat them respectfully, you will be treating them lovingly. That basically you can't really kind of distinguish the two, because I think they're so similar in certain ways that we do treat the people we love and care about naturally respectfully if we love and care about them, if we're a normal human being, to use that word.
Yeah.
Or just a fair, rational human being, or just being human.
Yeah, I think... you know, we need to give our partners the same type of respect and love that we would do in a friendship, because it's a friendship first, or yes, it should be. And you shouldn't, like, take your partners for granted, you know.
Right. Now, I will say with men, and I speak as a gay man, that we don't naturally think about the non-physical first. I think men in general seem to think about their physical attraction first, whether they're identifying as straight, bi, gay, whatever. As long as they see themselves as a cisgendered male, they are, I think, a little focused on the physical rather than the emotional.
Yeah, I have heard that as well from the cis gay men community. That's not my experience all the time. I am definitely right. attracted to different people for in different bodies for different reasons.
Uh-huh.
And there's, of course, like I'm attracted to people on a physical level, but it's a little bit more complicated for me than just the looks first, I guess.
Listening to you, you sounded almost pansexual for a minute, like I'm attracted to the person first.
Yeah, I would actually say I am pansexual. Yeah, that's a really great definition.
Okay, good. I'm glad I wasn't off. Good. Okay, good. So what makes this relationship different from others you've had? I'm curious. Can you speak to it?
We're not following a hierarchical dynamic. And so there's this sense of being more present in it. There's a special, there's this not like falling into this expectation of each other of like, oh, I'm now gonna move in with this person or et cetera, like climb the relationship escalator in the traditional way. And a lot of anxious attachment things that come with traditional relationship structures now get examined and talked about, and you get to make decisions, you know, together on how the relationship will move. There's not this unspoken expectation or something, mm-hmm. you know, which in the past has been a thing that has harmed my past relationships and hasn't been great for myself or my ex-partners. And now there's a lot more communication, agreeing, like growth in this more open and flexible way. And it is like intimidating, but it's also so empowering.
For the listeners, if you have any comments or questions for either Dar or myself, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. Let the call screener know who your question is for, whether it's for me, whether it's for Dar, and we'll take it from there. 503-231-8187, comments or questions. Thank you. So what next, Dar?
What next is me trying to plan, you know, my next steps in life without centering my romantic relationships as the end-all be-all. It's a lot more of what is important to me as my own individual person and what kind of growth and healing and plans and can I lean into that don't involve scarcity and don't involve like wrapping myself entirely around another person or people, which I used to do in the past. It's kind of like, let me grow alongside my partner, or if there will be partners, not, you know, get too wrapped up in it. I want to say that community, investing in your community, like friends, chosen family, is very important. And as important as romantic relationships, that's not what we get taught as society. We get taught to like just build your life with your one partner, and life is so much more than that.
I agree. I think the one mistake that so many of us make, and it took a long time for me to come to this realization, is that so many times a guy will talk with his guy friends about his relationship, or a girl talk with her girlfriends about their relationship. And what they're seeking, though, often comes back, we think of as being supportive, when it's really like, oh yeah, dump that, whatever, and you deserve better, and I'm of the mind, if you want a healthy relationship, only seek relationship advice from others in healthy relationships. If you admire that person's relationship, ask them for relationship advice, not your single friend who's always telling you, oh, I support you, I love you, you go girl, you go boy, you do you. And so many times you doing you, it leads to breakups when it comes from somebody feeling like they are now empowered by their friends. So I'm boiling it down to just seek advice from people in relationships whom you admire. And that's why I think no matter whether we're single or partnered, we should seek healthy advice from people in healthy relationships.
I agree with that, definitely.
Oh, even Carmina. Oh, go ahead, Carmina. Oh, okay, we've got a caller on the phone. Jeff? Jeff, are you?
Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Jeff. It's been months I haven't heard from you. How are you?
I continue to be dangerously well, no matter what they say, and boy, do they talk. Just some quickie comments, if you'll permit me, and thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you, Dar, for your contributions. I wanted to blurt this one out because it's an old trope that I carry with me, and that is, some people are gay, all people are queer. That being said, I am an ascetic, or an aesthete, and love and loyalty, it seems to me, are important parts of interrelationship. But I refer then to the bard who wrote in Hamlet, to thine own self be true. And it seems to me that that's the priority. And loyalty is often misinterpreted as some kind of doing everything without being true to oneself. And, Dar, I think you know what I'm talking about when I'm dragged the bard into this with to thine own self be true. I hope you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, I do. I hear you. And, you know, it's something I still admittedly, honestly struggle with, just kind of recentering myself and coming back, because those old attachment patterns and old traumas, some all the way from childhood, like come up and, you know, rear up in relationship when, and I want to, and I start sometimes like forgetting the whole plot and to come back to myself and take care of me. And it's hard, you know, to sit there with that, but it's important. It really helps when you have a good community to lean on, or like a therapist, you know.
You know, I was just going to go to that. Funny you should mention that, because you're both right. And as a psychologist in private practice in West Hollywood for all those years, what I would frequently have a new patient say something to me like, well, I'm here so you can give me advice and tell me what to do. And I would say, that's not why I'm here at all. I'm not here to tell you what to do or to give you advice. I'm here to help you figure out what you want to do, what you think is the appropriate thing. Step for you to take next. That's all the therapist is. They're a tour guide. They're pointing you in a particular direction. I feel that people already know what the right thing to do is for them, and hence the expression, to thine own self be true, which is you know what's right for you. You know deep in your heart. We all do. We all know deep in our heart what is right for us, who is right for us. And I don't think that can be underestimated. I think you guys are both right.
And perhaps it's a case that too often we get caught into this endless loop of judging ourselves through the eyes of others, or judging ourselves by the approval of others. And that can be so difficult and lead to so many problems. In the 1980s, I guess the 70s and 80s, we suddenly discovered self-esteem, which has kind of gone off the tracks and onto the sidetrack, and now is just another term. But knowing yourself, being true to yourself, and acknowledging that you are, I am enough already, and I don't need to be completed by others, per se. And that loyalty, I don't want to say loyalty is overrated, because it's not. It means so much that we are together and doing things together and honoring each other. But let's start right here.
Well, Jeff, I think that going back to the expression again, loyalty to yourself first, that whole self-esteem movement, that's the right information in the wrong hands. I think what happened was people use it as a way to rationalize their own selfish behavior rather than consider the fact that there's someone else in the room. Hello, it's not all about you. You know, it's about your partner as well, whomever. And getting back to what Dar was saying earlier about mutual respect, if your partner's in the room, treat them respectfully, and hopefully they will treat you the same way in return. And if they're not, maybe you're not with the right person.
Right on.
Yeah.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Dar.
Jeff, before you go, I have to tell you, you've been disappointing my 90-year-old Aunt Rose in New Jersey. She's been asking me for weeks, if not months now, where has Jeff gone? And I'm like, how would I know where Jeff has gone? He just has other things to do with his life.
Doctor?
So, yes.
Let me say right now, Aunt Ruth, I know you're listening. And you have an outstanding nephew who has come to our fair city from southern climes, who has a wealth of experience in dealing with persons and personalities. And Aunt Ruth, I love you.
Jeff, you make me blush.
Almost as much as I love myself.
You made my day. And I'm sure you've made Aunt Rose's day as well. She listens live, despite the fact she's in New Jersey. She pays attention to the time difference. She sits down in front of her computer, and she signs on to KBOO, and she's good to go. And she texts me after every show with her personal feedback, including for the guests, like the fact that you don't call when you don't. And I'm not saying that to slam you, Jeff, but that you are missed. You are missed by Aunt Rose when you're not calling in. So anyway, thanks for your call today, Jeff. So nice to hear from you again.
Thank you, Jeff.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so back to us.
Yeah.
Where were we, Dar?
We were talking about how it's important to come back to oneself in relationships. And I think it's important whether you're in heteronormative or queer relationships, whether you're poly or not, it's important to have your own thing going and not get too wrapped up in your partner. It's fine if you want to build a life with your person or people, but still take time to be by yourself. Still take time to invest in yourself and keep growing.
Yes.
Even if it feels kind of hard and unnatural, which it will to some of us, especially if we're like anxious, kind of like myself, for example. But it's good. I think it's necessary. It's a necessary practice.
Always have hobbies. Always have friends. Those things that belong to you and you alone. No matter what relationship I have ever been in, I've always had my hobbies and my friends, and I don't abandon them for the sake of the relationship, which I think is important. Now, sometimes you can combine them, sometimes you can't. But.
Yeah, if I may speak on that, like when my relationship of many years started falling apart and was really actively falling apart, who I turned to was my friends, was my community. And I was so grateful that I had kept up all those relationships to some extent, you know, some maybe more than others. But I had I have a small group of close friends, and I've stayed in touch over the years. Even sometimes as my ex-partner didn't participate or stay in touch with them, I made sure they were important to me. And guess who was there when my romantic relationship fell apart? My friends, you know, and my family were there to pick up the pieces. So,
and your sense of self, I'm sure.
Yes, my sense of self was definitely suffering, and it was definitely I had to sit in a lot of pain and grief for a long time. And thank you to my therapist, who's been with me for some years now. They helped me climb out of that. With their help and guidance, I climbed out of a dark place. But I would say my identity got wrapped up a lot in my future plans I had with this person and my life I had built. And it was uncomfortable disentangling that. And I realized after that, I don't ever want to tangle in that kind of way again, where there's this codependence and there's this forgetting of who I am and right. and disconnection from my own self and goals, dreams, hobbies, community. So,
well, you use the term codependence, which is about finding your happiness in that other person, which you can't pin all of your happiness on the other individual. Your happiness is about your self-fulfillment, not about somebody else's approval. And we can thank Hillary for the old, it takes a village, you know, because I always say with my being disabled, it takes a village to get Tony Zimbardi out of the house. I've got a roommate, I've got a boyfriend, and they both give me the once over before I leave my place. Make sure every button is buttoned, every zipper is zipped, every hair is in place. I mean, they all tell me if something's off. And thank goodness for that, because if they weren't telling me, who the hell knows how I would show up when I leave my house.
Well, I got to say, you have a cute fit on today. You are passing the fit check.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, it's a vibe.
Today's my day. I got the compliment from Jeff, and now I've gotten one from you. So I'll try to take that energy with me all throughout the day. And really, that's how we get by, because nobody else is giving. Well, it started out with you guys giving me particular compliments, but I take the energy that creates within me, and I use it to let me burn my energy to keep going throughout the day. You know, so.
Yeah, it's definitely how we relate to other people and how we interact. Is we're social creatures, you know, it's going to have a big effect on us, but it's just important to not forget the rest of the world and yourself when you're in a relationship, you know.
Speaking of social creatures, have you ever been fixed up, or have you ever fixed up any of your friends? Making introductions, things like that.
Oh, like tried to set some of my friends up?
Yes.
I have, in fact, and at times, there's times when I've tried to, and it just hasn't gone well. I don't think it's my gift.
That's important for you to know. It's important for all of us to know. If I'm fixing people up and it's not working, the problem is not those people. The problem is me. I'm doing something wrong there in my matchmaking, which I like to think I'm good at, but I don't know. I had a very dear friend fix me up with someone in a bar. Of course, that should be the number one rule. In a bar, alcohol is involved. Pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be the nightmare person from hell, ultimately, in the end. I ignored all of my red flags every step of the way. And I think that's an important thing. Again, when you're feeling a red flag, pay attention to it and listen to it. I'm going to go out on a spiritual limb here and say, when your gut is telling you something, listen to it. Your gut or your conscience is the voice of the divine within you. And if you will, not everybody believes in a divine presence, but I see the divine as sort of energy that we can sort of plug our sockets into. And the only way we hear what is right and not right for us is by listening to the inner voice. The inner voice, I believe, is that presence within you. You should listen to it. It's becoming louder and louder for a particular reason. So I'm going to go back to saying, if you have a call for Dar or myself, please let us know, 503-231-8187. You're listening to Radical Romance on KBOO, FM 90.7 on your dial. This is Tony Zimbardi, your host for the show. So please give either one of us a call. I am looking at Carmina through the window here, and there is this globe-like thing that I see before I see her, which looks like the head of an alien. Do you know what I mean, Carmina? Do you see it there? Yes. You're touching it. I think you said something and I didn't hear you.
It's a fan.
Oh, it's a fan that looks like a head of an Indian. Oh, I could use a fan in this room. I guess I'll have to bring my own next time. Because I'm wearing a sweater today, so I'm warm. But, well, you're wearing a sweater too. Does it keep that fan keep you cool? That looks like the back of a head of an alien. How's the temperature for you, Dar?
It's a little warm in here. I would say some circulation would be great in here. A little fan. Make yes. a difference. Yeah.
Good. Well, I'm great. Glad you're agreeing with me. Usually it's one of those gender things where the men are always warm and the women are always cold. But that's more like an office thing. People fight in the office a lot that men want the air conditioning on, women want the heat on, and the two shall never...
I think it depends body to body too. So many people have so many different things going on for them, you know, different like maybe disabilities or different things they're experiencing or you know, like the body changes for all people as we get older. So
you're right. Thank you for steering me away from generalizations and bringing it back to the specific. You're yeah. right about that. Thanks. Okay, so we still have time. What else should we be talking about in terms of your past relationship history?
I would say, and I don't want to, how do you say this delicate? I don't want to attack men or cis men, you know, in these comments, but I do think there is, in my past experiences, a lot of emotional labor that I did, and a lot of in more heteronormative cis straight relationships, dating men or AMAB or more mask people. I had so much trouble with communication. I ignored a lot of red flags. Well, first and foremost, I ignored a lot of red flags, and I should have walked away from many a relationship instead of being anxious, trying so hard to make it work. And now kind of a given for me is you have to be a good communicator and direct communicator, and you have to be in therapy or at least have done some work on yourself. I'm not going to push you, you know, to do that. I'm not going to push you to communicate well. I'm not going to be your therapist. We're no longer doing that. And I kind of give that advice. I would say I did that so much through my later teens and 20s and early 30s. And now in my like mid, late 30s, I think it's for everybody of any age across the board. There shouldn't be this disproportionate emotionally carrying the relationship thing going on. You gotta meet each other and grow together. So no longer I would say, and bringing it back, like in, I just want this, not just like cis men should do better, but like just take care of your emotional stuff. Don't put that on your partner, no matter what you identify as.
I agree with you completely, and I too had the thought earlier today, especially with those stories and books from the New York Times and the London Times about those women in polyamorous marriages, that I was worried today's show was going to be into a cis men bashing kind of program, and that's not the case at all. If there's a cis man listening to the show, please call in and let me know if you feel offended by anything either one of us have said today. 503-231-8187. Cis men, here is your opportunity to call in and give us a chunk of what you've been thinking as you've been listening, if you are listening. 503-231-8187. This is Radical Romance. Dr. Tony Zimbardi here, your host. And I'm speaking with my guest, Dar, about her specific life experience, which is important for any of us. If we're talking about our relationship, let's not make it about bashing our exes. I personally feel that love never dies. If you've ever loved anyone, you always love them. I still love any ex of mine I've ever been in a relationship with. I don't know if any of them are listening, but none of them live here in Portland. I don't have a, well, maybe I had one Portland ex, someone I dated. But anyway, so if you're out there, call in 503-231-8187. If you're an ex of mine and you feel somehow I have misaligned you in anything I've said, first of all, I apologize. Second of all, call in 503-231-8187. Might as well exploit my own relationship history. Why not? I do that with most of my guests here. So hopefully you're not feeling exploited by this interview, Dar.
No, I'm having a lot of fun. This is actually really great. And it's my first time being on the radio, having a radio interview, and it's a lot of fun, I will have to say. And I think it's been really awesome hearing your perspective and hearing your experience and like sharing space with a fellow queer person and talking about our, you know, dynamics and relationships from the past. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun, and it's yeah, I recommend other people come in and
so
talk.
As a radio virgin, have I been, what is the word people are always, have I been gentle, sensitive, whatever those are?
Yeah, it's okay, been good. it's been a really fun and pleasant experience. Thank you for having me today.
Good. And while we're still here on the air, if you have any questions or comments for me or Dar, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. Aunt Rose, if you're out there listening today, you've gotten a lot of love from me, Jeff, and in some ways, Dar, I'm sure, as well.
Shout out, Aunt Rose.
Yeah. Good old New Jersey. I don't know what the little motto is for the state. If you can call in and give us the motto for the state of New Jersey. I don't know what my home state motto is, Pennsylvania.
Oh, now, can I ask you, has your aunt ever called in?
Well, Aunt Rose, are you listening? Here's your opportunity. It's a long-distance call, but everyone has a cell phone these days. It doesn't matter anymore the way it used to.
I mean, she's such a big part of your life, and or it seems to be you guys are connected. It would be great if she called sometime and just chatted and actually shared her perspectives and shared her experience in relationships, even if, you know, they were more old-fashioned or traditional or heteronormative. Like, I kind of, you know, I'm curious what she thinks of this and what she thinks of your program.
Okay, we have someone named Fred on the line. Before I get to Fred, Aunt Rose, if you're listening, call in sometime, 503-231-8187. And now let's go to Fred. Fred, you're on the air.
Hey.
Hi, Fred.
How's it going? I just kind of caught the tail end of your conversation there. I was just wondering about, it seemed to me that there was, you know, you guys caught yourself going into generalizations about things, but then didn't we kind of just go back into more generalizations when we started talking about the cis men in general need to work on this and this and that and the other? And didn't we move back into generalizations, or is that, I just didn't wanted to check on that and see if that was a
We totally did. Thank you for pointing that out. And I'm sorry to generalize. I don't want to attack any particular individual or group. And I do apologize. I don't want to offend. I don't want to attack men and cis men in this situation, because I know a lot of, it is specific person to person. And I know there are a lot of cis men, no matter queer or not or whatever, they are working on themselves. And they are great people and great partners. So I do apologize.
Now, Fred, I don't mean to put you on the spot in the way that makes you feel uncomfortable, but I notice when I feel like I am being critiqued, I won't even say criticized, I'll just say critiqued, that sometimes I can take that a little bit too personally. And the reason is because there might be a bit of truth in what they're saying. So was there any bit of truth? And again, I'm not trying to let you off the hook without a net, but sure, was there
any... Oh, no, I mean, and I'm not offended, and I don't think apologies are necessary in an adult conversation, first of all. Like, I think that it's, you know, it's okay to express your opinions, and sometimes, I mean, generalizations are there because of a general, like, it's an overall thing that happens, and it's something that we can all kind of notice, and so sometimes generalizations are appropriate, and they can extend to a certain degree, and then we have to, like, get away from the generalization and then go to case-by-case basis. I don't think that it's, like, only generalizations or only personalizations are the only way to go. It's, like, a good mixture of the both, first of all. And then, yeah, I mean, I think, of course, there's truth in that people need to work on themselves. But that the only other one thing that I thought was a little bit odd was just saying that, I mean, if it's your personal preference not to want to date somebody who's not in therapy, that's one thing. But just like there must be a world where there are people who had like some sort of a healthy upbringing where it's not necessary to be into therapy. So I think a rule about saying like I only date people in therapy seems a little bit exclusionary to me.
Well, I think
so maybe those people have worked on that. Maybe those people have worked on that their entire life. Maybe they don't have critical traumas that they need to work through, or you know, maybe they were raised in a very loving and healthy, home. So does that person, like, you wouldn't ever date that person because they're not in therapy?
Well, let me say this, Jeff, as a former licensed Right. mental health professional, I do think the world could probably go on without therapists if everybody had one really good friend they could open up to, and that friend responded in a loving, caring way. I mean, I think that's what we all think our parents are supposed to do when we say certain things to them, is to just respond in a loving, caring way. But parents sometimes lose sight of that. And not every parent can think on their toes, especially if there's something going on in the heat of the moment. You just never know. All important, all the more reason why to meet someone where they are at, whether it's your child or your BFF. So any last comments before we get off this call?
No, thanks.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. Please call again.
Thank you.
My co-host, Dar. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because I think he wanted to make sure you got his point as well. I think he wanted both of us to get that
Yeah,
point.
I did get his point. And I think people who are not in therapy but are, of course... Yeah, I would consider dating them if they had, if they work on themselves in other ways, if they're present with themselves and they know themselves well and they check in with themselves and they have like a good, like you said, best friend or good community supporting them, where they didn't need so much like emotional input from myself or whoever is their partner. If they had that, you know, then yeah, therapy, you know, is not like, in that case, maybe the most important. I've had a lot of different life experiences, and some of them have been intensive. And I guess I connect to other people that have also lived through intensive and, life experiences that have shaped them in certain ways. And so, to deal with that, I guess I'm in therapy, they're in therapy, and that's who I'm usually interested in. But that I know is not the case for everybody, and different people connect, you know, on different levels for different reasons. And so therapy is not the end all be all, but growth and self-work in whatever way, you know, whether it's through hobbies, spiritual work, etc., is important.
You know what? We're getting close to having to wrap up for today, but I wanted to say, before I took Fred's call, we were talking about Aunt Rose, and one thing I did as a kid for sure was idolized the relationship between Aunt Rose and Uncle Bill, her dearly departed husband, who's no longer with us. Anyway, I loved them both, idolized them both, idolized their relationship. I thought they demonstrated a healthy give and take in terms of their communication. Their communication and agreement when it came to rearing their children. I thought they were wonderful parents. I wanted to be one of their kids. Aunt Rose knows that. I once wrote them a letter asking if they could somehow take me on as one of their brood, which was only, again, out of love, not out of any disrespect to my own parents, but because I idolized the relationship they had. And I know I need to stop talking for now, so we're starting to wrap up for today. So, any parting comments for today?
I think more people should come and listen and come on the show and keep this kind of interesting topic alive. It's really great that you're doing this, and I'm really grateful to be a part of it, and I'm excited to watch it grow. And actually, shout out to Community Radio. Thank you, KABU, for existing. Very key part of the community. Very important. We have to keep supporting it and keep showing up, you know, and keep calling in. And I'm grateful that KABU exists too.
And on that note, Dar, I will thank you for being a participant in this discussion today. And sure, those of you who are listening, you want to be on the show, try to reach out to me here at KABU. I'm here every Wednesday for one reason or another. If I'm not doing the show, I'm doing some other form of volunteer work. If you'd like to be on the show, try to call me or email me through the station, and I'll be happy to return your communication. And for that, I'm going to say goodbye, Portland Pollies. I'll see you and hear you next time. And for now, happy playing.
I guess I never told you I'm so happy that you're mine. Little things I should have said and done, I just never took the time. You and you were always on my. You were always on my mind. Tell me that your sweet love hasn't died. And give me one more chance to keep you satisfied.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is the Dirtbag.
holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.